good to go. It's almost half past. Colleagues, good morning. Stormy, would Ben please just give guidance if we are good to start? And then we will dive right into it. Thank you very much. Am I audible?
Yes,
Yes, you are
Ben.
indeed.
Oh, okay, perfect. Lovely. All right. Let's get ready to get going. Colleagues, Parliament Channel has asked that we keep our cameras on when the meeting starts for those who will be speaking. Thank you.
Recording in progress.
Right, colleagues, good morning, and welcome to our meeting, and thank you very much for your patience. We will be this morning be receiving an update report. As you recall, that the next SIU investigations reporting to the PPEs was due on the 30th of November. This is not the final report. It's the sixth report, update report that will be presented to us this morning. And so that is where we are. So I think, colleagues, let's get into it and then we'll do our housekeeping matters at the end of this meeting so that we have maximum time to engage on it. And of course, I think the next report of the SIU into the PPEs will be the last, or rather the final report. But it's good that we received the updates to gauge progress on all the multifaceted aspects of the crime against humanity, which was committed through the corruption of PPEs during the worst health crisis of our lifetime. And so the fact that the nerve, cheek, and audacity of the criminals went beyond rearing its ugly head is why we are here. And so I think, therefore, it's important that we deal with this issue. Of course, there's the considerations around whistleblowers which still require our attention, who need maximum protection against these ruthless criminal elements who are really unwavering in their outlook to just leave a trail of destruction. And so we're really heavily reliant on the SIU to lead the charge in these investigations. So colleagues, good morning and welcome. And so let me hand over to the SIU. And thank you, colleagues, for our very worthwhile, successful oversight visit to the post office, South African Post Office, last week. I think it was time well spent in peeling the post office onion. All right. So, Babu Mthibi and your team, good morning. Welcome, and to our ever-present stakeholders, the AG, National Treasury, and the media. I see a lot of heightened media presence this morning on the platform. And of course, the SIU is always with us, but this morning they are presenting. So Mthibi, let me hand over to you, and then you will be in your hands, and then colleagues, we will take questions afterwards. So good morning and welcome to you and your team. Over to you. So Stombi, could Ben enter the apologies, please, as usual.
Good morning, Honorable Chair of SCOPA and Honorable Members of SCOPA. We appreciate the opportunity to brief SCOPA on the progress that SIU has made to conduct the investigations into the irregularities and other infractions committed during the procurement of PPEs. So today you'll see in the report that we also report on the outcomes of an investigation in Gauteng relating to the infrastructure part of the COVID-19 mitigation measures. We've got an outcome there that comes from the Gauteng team. Chair, just before I proceed, I am joined by my colleagues from the provincial heads and some of my colleagues from the EXCO. In the interest of time, we'll not introduce all of them, but whenever they come in onto the platform, we'll introduce them. The provincial heads will take the last part, which really deals with the investigations finalized in their areas in this time of reporting. As you correctly said, Honorable Chair, this is the report to SCOPA based on the sixth progress report that was submitted to the President. And it deals primarily with matters that have been finalized in that report. The last time we appeared at SCOPA, we presented based on the fifth report that was submitted. So the next one would be the seventh and the final, which we will be submitting to the President on the 10th of December. So we are really hard at work finalizing that report so that it reaches the President on the time that has been allocated to us by the President. I would like to then proceed with today's presentation. My colleague, Mr. Lekgetho, please, can you project the presentation? And then let's start off. Honorable Chair and honorable members, as we always do, we really present high level the legislative mandate, which we will not spend time on. We've done that time and time again at SCOPA. If you go to slide number 3, That's the legislative mandate, which will not go through. And then slide number four. Slide number four, Honorable Chair, again, is really just to spend a minute on it, because as we now close on the investigations, we will be focusing in the main on ensuring that the outcomes of the investigations are implemented and consequence management is meted out. In terms of all those boxes that appear in front of the Honorable Committee, we will be updating the committee on the civil litigation process that we have instituted, mainly in the special tribunal, but there are other few that that are in the High Court, instituted by those who take action to challenge our reports. They usually approach the High Court. So we've got a few of those and we'll mention them. As we have said before, that the special tribunal is approached, or the High Courts, to institute civil proceedings where there are potential recoveries of assets. We also preserve pensions and other assets and bank accounts to ensure that when we ultimately recover, there are monies that we can resort to. We will be updating the committee on the new referrals in this period of reporting, and we will touch on the other previous referrals we've reported on the disciplinary actions that we have referred to the state institutions, and based on our follow-ups, what is it that is the progress update. And we will also then be briefing the committee on the referrals of criminal evidence to the NPA, where we have found evidence pointing to criminal action, and we require the NPA to make an appropriate decision in that regard. And then, of course, there's other referrals to other regulators. We will also, as we now finalize the report, we will also be talking on the systemic recommendations. But today we will really just make mention in the final report, there will be an area where we address quite at length what are we going to do around systemic recommendations. If you go to the next slide, please. Yes, as we said, this is the briefing of SCOPA based on the sixth report. You can proceed. Go to the next slide, number seven. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, as we always do, we always refer to the actual COVID expenditure as at the time when we are investigating. And these are the figures that we check with the National Treasury. We've checked that the actual COVID expenditure as at April to June 2021 is about 138.8 billion. Now, of that amount, the total value of the contracts being investigated by SIU is 14.8 billion. That is the contract value. Now, as at the time of this reporting, of the 14.8 billion that is under investigations, and based on the SIU investigations, we've also determined that the 14.8 billion is about 11% of the COVID expenditure of 138.8 billion. Now, of that 14.8 billion worth of irregular contracts, the investigations that have been completed and outcomes have been reached, particularly with regard to referrals of matters to the special tribunal, as at the date of this report, we have referred about 1.91 billion worth of contract value of contracts that have been found to be irregular by the investigations, and those have been referred to the special tribunal in order to set the contract aside and to recover the losses that the state institutions would have suffered. The blue part of that circle is obviously the balance. If you take out the 14.8 billion, we're left with about 124 billion. Next slide. Chair, we thought it appropriate also that we just show this picture. You'll see there that most of the expenditure has been spent at a national level, and this would mean national state institutions. And that those institutions, in terms of this data, about 101 billion has been spent to those institutions, followed by provincial state institutions at about 32 billion, and then followed by local government at about 5.1 billion. Now we show on the extreme right just how we have dissected the 14.8 billion that is under investigation. As the committee would see, that the investigations actually reflect that most of those irregular contracts are in the provincial state institutions, followed by national, and the last one, it's local government. Now, having done that, Honorable Chair, we obviously then set ourselves off to investigate, and we've been reporting various outcomes. If we go to the next slide. The next slide, Honorable Chair, as we have done before, we always indicate if there are any limitations that we have experienced during the investigation. We have reported before, and these are found in slides number 9 to 12. In this report, there are no new limitations, Honorable Chair, that we report. What we want to just put on record is that these limitations, as we have reported before, just an example, if you go on slide number 10, we showed limitations on the left-hand side and steps taken on the right-hand side to mitigate these limitations. So our observation up to now is that the steps that we have taken to mitigate the limitations have really assisted the investigations. And these limitations have been reported before, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We will not go through them one by one, except to just report that the steps that we have taken have really showed value in mitigating the limitations. If we go to slide number 13, Honorable Chair, introduces the observations that we also make as we do the investigations. And we have reported before, these are the observations relating to how these irregularities were committed, including the modus operandi that has been used by all these people who are implicated with these irregularities. Now, all these observations, Honorable Chair, again, we've reported them before. They are on slide number 14. You can go to slide 14. As the Honorable Committee can see, slide 14, slide number 15, we've reported them before. Slide 15, slide 16, and they go up to slide number 17. What we would like to emphasize today, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, around these observations, again, as we finalize our investigations now and prepare the final report. The question is what becomes of these observations? This is where we will have to play a critical role as SIU, particularly around the systemic recommendations and how to improve and make sure that measures are put in place by state institutions. We will probably engage with the National Treasury as well, so that we can present our observations and how is it that we recommend that all of these should be mitigated going forward, so that we do not have the experience of this wild, large-scale irregularities and corruption that we have observed during this PPE procurement. So we will be doing that, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. It will be included in the final report in terms of how we're going to engage with the state institutions, in particular the National Treasury, on how to take this into account in terms of improving the system, improving the legislation, and just putting the appropriate controls in place to mitigate this kind of irregularities going forward. That deals with the comments on the observations. There are no new observations that the teams have picked up during the investigations in this reporting period. Now that takes us to slide number 18, which introduces the contract under investigation. And if you slide to slide number 19, please. Honorable Chair, as we always show the picture to the Honorable Committee, as at the time of this progress report, the number of PPE contracts awarded for COVID-19 related services under investigations by the SIU, the contracts numbered at 5,054. And these were awarded to about 2,686 service providers. Now we've broken it down in terms of percentages. 29% of these investigations into this contract and service providers have been finalized as at the time of this report. 64% were still ongoing at the time, and 7% had yet to commence at the time. As the honorable members can see, that the value of contract, which is the second block from the right, the overall value aligns with the one we have reported in the previous slide, which is about 14.8 billion rands. Honorable Chair, I need to pause at this stage and just underline that as of today, and when we now prepare for the final report, the picture has really changed immensely from the picture as it is now. As I checked with the reporting and quality assurance team, which we're just left with about two provinces to finalize this picture. But we will give this picture to the committee at the next reporting, but I would have loved to just give a comparison of how in the final report it would look like, but we didn't want to distort the picture because the team is still working on incorporating the two provinces that were outstanding. But suffice to say that the picture will show a significant improvement. In fact, as at yesterday, there were no contract investigations that were still to commence. And now we were just finalizing the figures. So This report actually records matters. It is the sixth report, but it reports the investigations that were as at the 9th of July. As at the 9th of July were included in this sixth report that was sent to the president. So why am I saying that, Honorable Chair? It's that if you count from 9th July to today, to the 7th of December, I think we're counting about 5 months. So in the 5 months that has passed, we have really done our utmost best so that we finalize the investigations that we are reporting on in this sixth report. Slide number 20. As we always show the picture to the Honorable Committee, this is really by province in terms of the finalized investigations per province and the values related to the contracts that the provinces are investigating or investigated. Without going through all of the provinces, I just really picked up about four provinces in terms of contract value. The first one being KZN of finalized matters, and they finalized matters to the value of 2.1 billion. It's followed by national team, the national, which is the national state entities. They finalized investigations to the tune of 1.5 billion. Number three is Eastern Cape at the bottom there. They finalized investigations to the tune of 1.4 billion. Number four, it's Gauteng. The Gauteng province at the top finalized investigations worth 1.2 billion. And then the rest of the provinces really show their respective values. The next slide, Honorable Chair, just shows ongoing investigations as at the time of this progress report. Once more, I just picked up the province with the highest value, about four of them. Number one, Gauteng team. The Gauteng team, as at the time of this report, still had matters to the value of 4.5 billion under investigation. And the contribution of this high value was from the Department of Education in Gauteng. And of course, there were also infrastructure build investigations, which one of them has been finalized, and we are already at the special tribunal. We'll report at it now when we go into the civil litigation matters. So those contributed to this high value, but the team in the past 5 months to date have really worked hard. We have prioritized these investigations, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, so that we are able to complete them and report in the final report so that we can really end and get finality to this PPE investigations report, and then of course follow up with all those consequence management. Right, so Gauteng is followed by national team, which was still investigating about 448 million worth of contracts. Number three, Eastern Cape, still investigating 527 million worth of contract. Number four is KZN. As you can see, the KZN team has really worked hard to work down the contracts that they were investigating to about 99 million ongoing as at the time of this report. The next slide, we are going now, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, into the outcomes of the investigations. And as I indicated in the outcomes slide, we start off with the outcomes that led to the civil litigation matters where irregularities have been found with the contracts under investigation. With your permission, Honorable Chair, at this stage, I will introduce the Chief Legal Counsel of SIU, Dr. Wells, who will take the Honorable Committee through the updates and progress made on the civil litigation matters. Over to you, Dr. Wells.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Thank you, Advocate Mativi. Dear Honorable Chair, I'm also joined on the platform by the head of the Civil Litigation Unit at the SIU Advocate Society. The presentation that I'm about to do, Honorable Members and Chair, is slides 23 to 44. I will then move to slide 23. On this slide, this is a new matters that have been instituted subsequent to the last report by the SIU. And this matter, it was instituted in the Special Tribunal. As previously alluded to by Advocate Mativi, it deals with the aspect of infrastructure, more particularly the renovation and construction of hospital and accommodation. In this respect, there were three contracts concluded. The SIU established that these contracts were irregularly concluded and awarded, and will in the following few weeks bring a review application to have the decision to award the contract set aside. In the page slide number 23, it's just an interim action that was taken. It's the preservation of funds to the amount of 8,000 Rand that was held in the account of two service providers. That has subsequently been challenged in the Special Tribunal, and you will note that on slide 24, what we call is the reconsideration application, that judgment has been reserved in that matter. I will then move to slide 25. This deals with matters that have been previously reported to the Honorable Committee, and the purpose of the presentation that I will deal with here is to just give an update on the matters that have already been instituted. We can move to slide 26. In the following slides, you will note that there are no numbers, so I will refer to rows. Previously mentioned is row one is the matter that was the review of the application or the review application concerning the report issued by the SIU. The impact made is notable that the reports and recommendations of SIU is subject to legality review, and that the executive authority can be held accountable for dereliction. I think I just need to repeat that has been previously reported. I will move to row two. In that matter is a matter, and all these applications that I'm dealing with on this slide are matters that have been issued and instituted or opposed by the SIU in the High Court. Row two deals with a matter instituted in the Western Cape High Court. You will note the last sentence that this matter is now set down for trial on the 3rd of February 2022. And the row three, we successfully joined the proceedings. That means that proceedings were instituted without the SIU. The SIU has now become a party to the litigation, and we obtained such an order granting us that permission, and the parties are exchanging pleadings. We have now, the matter has been heard on 19 August 2021, and judgment has been reserved. Let me just correct that. That is for the joining application. The next slide that I want to move to, Honorable Members, is slide 27. And the year the numbers, a year we fortunately have the slide numbers. So one and two we previously reported on. Just number one, that is the contract that has been set aside, also known as the scooter case. That contract has been set aside, and the result was that no payment has to be made by the department. The second one is the OR Tambo door-to-door. Notably in this chair, we previously reported that we obtained an order in this matter. It has subsequently been rescinded, and we are waiting further directions from the tribunal, special tribunal, concerning the further procedures and hearing of this matter. Number three, Chair, the trial was postponed in this matter. It did not proceed on the 27th of September. The SIU applies for case management on 14 October 2021, and we await the date from the Registrar of the Special Tribunal. So, Chair, let me just pause at this time because there will be a lot of references to awaiting dates from the special from the Register of the Special Tribunal. It is probably just appropriate to give some background to this. When the parties have concluded the exchange of pleadings, the presiding officer and judge usually give directions as to what pleadings needs to be filed. Pleadings, that means each one must put their case on record. And then once that is finalized, the parties then need to apply for a date for hearing or for further directions from the Registrar of the Special Tribunal. Now, that is the date we await for the further hearing of the matter. Chair, on slide 28, we previously reported on the matter of number four. Notably, judgment is reserved there, meaning that the tribunal will issue its decision when they are finalized by the judge. Number five, Chair, I will immediately move to slide 30, which is the conclusion of the matter referred to under number five. In this matter, honourable members, notably the contract was set aside, reviewed and successfully set aside by the SIU. The respondent filed applied for leave to appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal. That was denied, and there is now a pending application in the Constitutional Court. We are now awaiting a date from the Registrar of the Constitutional Court to hear the appeal or otherwise of the respondents. The next slide is slide number 31, Chair. I'll refer to number eight. This is similarly a situation where the respondent made an application to join certain other parties, including the executive authority. That application was unsuccessful. On direction of the judge, this matter has now been has been joined with another matter that has been issued by the SIU. So we bring in an application to join number six and number nine, which is on 32. So that matter will be heard as one if the application is successful, the joint application by the SIU is successful. Number seven, Chair, in this matter, the respondent challenged the adequacy of the record filed by the SIU, said it is not sufficient information that was filed concerning the administrative decision taken. And in this regard, the matter was heard and the judgment is reserved. Chair, I will move to slide 32. This is the matter of Zakheni Strategic on number eight. This matter will be heard on the 2nd of February 2022 in the Special Tribunal. I previously reported on number 9, which I mentioned will be joined with the matter noted at number 6. Number 10 is similarly an application that was brought in the Special Tribunal. This case is also being joined with number 13 on the following page. And in this matter, the application for the review was set down and heard on the 24th to 25th November, and judgment has been reserved. Let me just note number 10 is there now joined with number 30 on slide 33. Number 11 in this matter, it is a application that we brought. It's unopposed, and we're just awaiting a date from the Special Tribunal. We can move to slide number 33. Honorable members, on this slide, nothing has materially changed since our last report. Notably, you will know number 14 is also commonly referred to as the bait breach matter. And that matter, we, by agreement, have concluded where the respondent has undertaken not to demand any money, and that the department need not settle the contract value. But that was done subject to the SIU bringing a review application. So I will turn to slide number 34, where we will deal with the review application that was then subsequently heard. Notably in this matter, we have established that the court has, that the Special Tribunal has jurisdiction, and it has the powers to bring a review application. Sorry, Chair, I'll just reject the call. In the matter of bait breach and the pending application, I will report on later in the report, but just to confirm that the present situation is that the judgment has been reserved in terms of the review application. Number 15, Stadtschweier. This matter was postponed and the SIU awaits a hearing date from the Register of the Special Tribunal. Slide 35. In this matter, the more recent update is that the SIU has joined further respondents and pleadings are being exchanged in this matter. Hearing of the interlocutory and the review application, that is the review application to set aside the contract, will be allocated by the registrar. In the number 17, the most recent update there is that pleadings have closed and the trial date has been set for 11 to 12 March 2022. We have previously dealt with the matter number 18, which is finalized. I will then move to slide number 36. Number 36, number 19, in this matter, the Special Tribunal awarded an order, a judgment, in fact, but requested that the judgment be served on the respondent. The respondent has now subsequently applied for a rescission of judgment, and which the SIU is now opposing, and we are awaiting a date from the registrar at the Special Tribunal. Similarly, number 20, in this case, the matter is being opposed by the respondent, and we also applied for a hearing date, which is awaited from the registrar at the Special Tribunal. I will then move to slide 37. Number 21, Chair, this matter is finalized and reported as such previously. 22, in this case, similarly, the SIU applied for a date and awaiting same from the registrar. So without going into detail as previously done, number 22 to number 40. Chair, these are matters that have been instituted in the special tribunal. You will note that all of them, or most of them, refer to dates that we are waiting from the registrar, where we've applied for hearing dates. And you will note that at for example, at number 29 on slide 38, that the respondents have approached the SIU to attempt settlement, and these dates are awaited. And I will refer to these matters specifically. Number 29 on slide 38, we are awaiting an, the settlement proposals, but if same is not received, we will apply for a trial date by 15 December 2021. Similarly, Chair, is number 37 on slide 40, similar procedure. So the point that I wish to make by this is that we're not awaiting and not entertaining any delaying tactics from the respondents in the pursuance and in proceeding with the civil litigation. So in number 37 as well, we are awaiting the settlement proposals, but we'll notwithstanding, if not received, we will apply on that particular date, the 10th of December, for a trial date. Similarly, at number 39 on slide 40. Sorry. Honourable members, on number 40 is the same, and for the record, slide number 41, number 40. If no settlement by the SIU will on 14 receive, we will, on the 14th of December, apply for a hearing date with the Registrar of the Special Tribunal. Number 41 is once again, it has been previously reported on, but the impact is notable that, as Advocate Matibi earlier mentioned, that we do bring restraint applications in respect of officials' pension benefits. That is what is also being dealt with in number 42, where we have now subsequently issued summons in respect of those pensions that we've frozen, and as well as in terms of the damages that have been suffered. Now, the Honourable Committee will note that there was a trial date set, but the SIU has reapplied for a date, and we are waiting the date from the registrar. That is similarly on number 43, notably in the number 44, the SIE has also applied for a date from the Special Tribunal. Now, honourable members, I will then proceed with the matters dealt with under cover of slide 42 and move to slide 43. These are all orders granted, and let me just mention orders in this sense is very generic. It is the value of the contract set aside, or the restraint value of a pension, or the contract value that has been redeemed. So it can be one of any of those. And what I just need to insert is that the value of these orders is on slide 44, which we omitted, is in the region of 174 million. Honourable members, that is the conclusion of the updates and the report in terms of the new matters instituted by the SIU in the Special Tribunal and in the High Courts. I will then hand back to Advocate Matibi.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Walsh. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. So, Honorable Members, this really demonstrates that we've really set ourselves up and ensured that the system works, that the investigators conclude their investigations speedily and hand over where there's a need to institute court proceedings over to the civil litigation team, and the civil litigation team are on brief without delay to ensure that these matters are scheduled in the special tribunal. It is only on that basis where matters are adjudicated or handled speedily that we will not delay in terms of holding those who are responsible to account, recover the monies that they've been stolen, recover the assets that have been acquired through corrupt means, and by doing so, we'll be able to make the impact that we'd like to make. So, Honorable Chair, I'd like to just make a comment. As we commented earlier on when we spoke about the COVID expenditure, the question can be asked about we saying we referred matters as at the time of this report to the value of 1.91 billion to the Special Tribunal. And the grand total on slide 41, if you can go to slide 41, please. The grand total on slide 41, I think my colleague probably just skipped to refer to that, shows a grand total of 1.3 billion. So the question could be asked, where's the difference? So what happens is we refer matters to the Special Tribunal and they get issued. I think it's a process term. They get issued, they're given case numbers and so on. So the balance that is not reflected here is matters that are still referred to the Special Tribunal. Dr. Wells could confirm that if need be, and those that could still be processed to get case numbers and so that they are also projected as cases issued in the special tribunal. So I really wanted to make that comment. And with regard to the orders granted, which starts on page 42. And it's covered on page 43 and page 44. Those are the orders granted. We have sought to separate this, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, because what Dr. Wells was reporting on, showing a whole number of cases at the Special Tribunal, and so we need to demonstrate the end product. Because at the end of the day, we want to see matters that have been finalized. So these orders granted indicate processes within this litigation space that have been finalized. And we are really pleased to see the Special Tribunal adjudicating these matters as speedily as they are. But of course, that depends on us. It depends on us on how we speedily assess the evidence and take these matters to the Special Tribunal. But that is very, very key. The more we delay to take cases to court, is the more that evidence, you know, would disappear, witnesses would disappear, and actions would be delayed. So I really wanted to make that point, as my colleague had indicated. And I'm not sure if Dr. Wells may have not indicated the total value as we speak about the orders granted. That part of the orders granted is about 174,504,000. But we can just indicate in full later on when we respond to questions. I really wanted to just indicate, Honorable Chair, one other point is that we're dealing with people here who would push back at any point to push back on being held to account. And of course, it is their right to appoint, you know, legal representatives and be represented. But the point that gets raised during this litigation processes, you can really get it that they would really want to, you know, push back and, well, they've got the right to defend themselves. But in many instances, it's matters that are raised, honestly, just to delay the process. And as my colleague says, we don't take kind to that. And we also bring up our legal machinery to defend that. There's one matter, in fact, about two matters, including the Baitbridge one, where, amongst others, the parties challenged the jurisdiction of the special tribunal. As I say, it is their right to bring up any legal issue or legal item in the process, but we are happy that the jurisdiction of the special tribunal now has been ruled. There's no question that it's got the jurisdiction to adjudicate on these matters, and we will proceed bringing these cases there to be speedily adjudicated upon and hold these people to account. We have seen and demonstrated through this process that assets can be recovered quickly, bank accounts, monies can be recovered quickly, and ultimately, the impact that we would like to see, that the public would like to see, that the honorable members would like to see, is then made. Honorable Chair, that is the civil litigation part that Dr. Wells dealt with. Of course, we can take further questions later on when we conclude. The next part deals with the, again, referring the Honorable Committee to the slides on the outcomes. We're dealing with some of the outcomes now relating to consequence management on disciplinary actions taken against officials who find themselves involved in these irregularities. Mr. Lekhat, if you can go to slide number 46. Right, Honorable Chair, these are the new referrals. And we use the word referrals because we refer evidence pack to the state institutions so that it can enable the state institutions, the accounting authority or the accounting officer to take action against those officials. Of course, there's a due process that gets followed. They constitute disciplinary hearings and that process then takes place. But we want to see that process taking place without delay. Let it be subjected to that due disciplinary process without any delay. So in these new matters, there's about 15 of them that were referred in this period of the report. There's a senior manager at Nelson Mandela Metropolitan that was referred for failure to comply with MFMA circulars. The disciplinary process was initiated. There were two officials or two referrals there. The disciplinary process was initiated against one official. However, it's not finalized yet. In respect of the other official, municipality is still waiting a council resolution. In Gauteng, one referral against one middle manager, again, infractions against the PFMA. This was in the Gauteng Department of Health. The department confirmed receipt of the referral made, and the disciplinary action is pending. Once more, we will follow up to ensure that that disciplinary action is implemented. in the city of Johannesburg. Again, we've made a referral against the middle manager, contravention of MFMA. The city again confirmed having received this referral, and the disciplinary action is pending. The National Department of Employment and Labor, we referred one senior manager in this reporting period. Again, this was the contravention of the PFMA. It's pleasing to see that the disciplinary process has already been implemented and conducted, and the official was found guilty. We've noted that the sanction that was given there is a final written warning and fined 1 month salary. So when we do the follow-ups, Honorable Chair, we really do assess, amongst others, the types of sanctions that are given, and assess really whether they are commensurate with the charges that have been preferred. Again, at the Department of Employment and Labor, one referral of a senior manager, where the disciplinary hearing is still ongoing. At the National Department of Health, this was under the Digital Vibes investigation. There were 9 referrals. We are informed when we followed up that one official has pleaded guilty, and we are awaiting the sanction that will be meted out on this official. So then the rest, we will follow up continuously as we do to ensure that those disciplinary processes are taken. Honorable members and Honorable Chair, the next slide, we have reported before all of these disciplinary processes, but I can just go page by page, just indicating the status, because what we do is we follow up, even as from the last appearance of SCOPA, the provincial teams and the national teams, they continue to follow up with the state institutions on the status of this disciplinary hearings. For example, on page 47, you'll see that the Amatola Water Board, there were 2 referrals referred back in March of 2021. This was around the contravention of PFMA. On the extreme right, is the update. The official was dismissed on the 27th of October 2021. It looks like this was really an official at a lower level, junior official, who was an intern, whose contract was then not renewed. Again, in the Eastern Cape Department of Education, there's a disciplinary process against one official in the middle management ranks. The disciplinary process is still ongoing. Eastern Cape Department of Education, again, against one middle manager. All of these would have been the contravention of the legislations mentioned in the charges column. The official was found guilty. Again, we are really pleased to see this progress, and the SIU is awaiting formal communication on the sanction meted out. Again, in the Eastern Cape Department of Health, there was one senior manager who moved from that department. As you can see on the progress update, the official moved to the office of the Premier. And when he got there, we had to refer that disciplinary hearing to the Premier's office. But it appears from an employment perspective that this person was no longer subject to the Public Service Act. But Chair, we are really following up here. that whether you are subject to the Public Service Act or whether we are on an advisory to the Premier in his office, one way or another, there should be a process that will hold you to account. So as we say on that progress update, the team was informed that this person is employed as a consultant in the office of the Premier, and therefore the public service is not applicable. So the question is, what next? We cannot just leave this unattended. We need to see a consequence management on that former official. The next slide. In the Eastern Cape, again, Department of Transport, there was an official, junior official. He was found guilty, and a final written warning was handed down. Nelson Mandela Bay Metropolitan Senior Management, a disciplinary board, we are informed, has been established to process the referral. And the referral was made back on March 2021. So it's really a while back, and it's worrying to see that the progress that we got is that the council has been established to consider this referral. That is a demonstration of the delay that we always speak of when we are at the committee. And of course, from our side, the best we do is to follow up to ensure that the action is taken. In OR Tambo District, again, senior management, our members presented evidence at two municipal councils. The SIA report was accepted by the council, and the resolution was taken at these meetings. But however, no disciplinary action has yet been instituted against these officials. Well, we're sadly informed that one of the officials is deceased. Slide 49. Honorable Chair, this is Free State. At the top, a senior manager who referred for disciplinary process. We are informed that the Office of the Premier in the Free State Province is still considering disciplinary action. Similarly, still in Free State Treasury, a senior manager, the official was transferred to another department. And what we do, of course, is that the referral follows you wherever you go. But we are informed that the officer resigned on 30 June. Before disciplinary steps were taken. And these matters are then brought to the attention of the civil litigation team, because we have demonstrated that resignation from employment should not absolve you from consequence management. We then institute processes to freeze pension, but of course, it also you face criminal action where the evidence points to that. And also, if you've played a role in the losses of the state, we will then cite you in the special tribunal process. The next ones are in Gauteng, middle manager. The SIU has been informed that the Department of Health is considering the evidence of the file that we have presented to them. Still in Gauteng Health, middle manager, disciplinary process has been completed and the sanction is outstanding. We'll follow up on that. Gauteng Department of Health, senior management, the SIU has been informed that the official was found guilty and has been dismissed from the Gauteng Department of Health. Again, we are pleased to see those outcomes and consequence management being meted out. There's one official in the Department of Health in Gauteng who seemed to have left the department and joined the SAA. Again, here the charges were really failure to declare financial interest. But when we followed up at SAA, we were informed that SAA was under administration at the time and that they had not as yet taken action. Slide 50. Gauteng Department of Health continued. This one deals with the spokesperson, or this would be the national, we apologize for that. This would be National Department of Health, the spokesperson of the president. The presidency confirmed that action was instituted against the official and sanction of written warning was issued. This would be National Department of Health. We apologize for that. Gauteng, again, Department of Health, senior manager. We were informed that the official resigned from the Gauteng Department of Health on or about the 3rd of October. Once more, resignation should not absolve anyone from any action going forward. Gauteng Department of Health, I've already indicated, was the second one where we've been informed that the official resigned from the department prior to receiving the final verdict from the chairperson. So he underwent the disciplinary process and then resigned in the process. Again, we do take steps. We freeze the pension so that the person can face consequences. We referred matters to the city of Johannesburg. About five senior and middle management. We contacted the city of Joburg and they indicated that one official has been placed on suspension. The chairperson of the JPC board advised that the SIU, that a firm of attorneys has been appointed to facilitate the disciplinary process. We sent a request to the city manager on the 24th of November for update, and we are still to get an update. City of Swanee, there's two officials that we referred there, but in that case, it appears that the city of Swanee, they looked at the referral and the evidence, and when they gave us feedback, they say that they are satisfied that the official executed their duties in accordance with the powers vested in them by the SCM policy, thereby saying they do not find that the officials committed any irregularities. But Honorable Chair, our view is that that is not due process. We expect that due process should be followed, where disciplinary hearing is constituted and such kind of findings should be made after evidence is listened to. In this case, there was no evidence that was listened to, and the city just made that decision, and we will be following up on that one. But National Department of Correctional Services, we made four referrals, and in this case, the SIU members have already testified there, we have informed that the cross-examination is currently ongoing. The matters will continue. We just need to follow up those days of past 29 and 30th November. We need to just do an update. This falls under our Chief National Investigating Officer. We'll follow up and give updates on what's happening to that. National Department of Employment and Labor. Again, there were seven referrals. In this case, SIU attended and testified at the hearings of four officials. All four officials pleaded guilty to the charges. The disciplinary hearings of the remaining three officials are still ongoing. National Laboratory Services, we referred about eight officials there. The three officials resigned before the hearings could commence. The trend, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that we always report about. This is a trend that we have picked up, that officials resign in the face of disciplinary hearings. However, Disciplinary hearings in respect of two officials have commenced. One official was suspended for 3 months without pay and is expected back at work, was expected in October. The official received a written warning. One official was dismissed. One matter is still ongoing. KZN Department of Education, we referred two officials, senior officials and one junior official. The chairperson and employer representative have been appointed. We are waiting for the final date of this hearing. Honorable Chair, KZN Department of Education again, seven referrals. In this case, we received a communication from the MEC with some questions around the referral, and we responded to that. The matter is under further consideration by the MEC. We'll follow up on that. KZN Steel Department of Education, further six referrals. In this case, we are informed that the sanction received for one senior official, one sanction has been received, and the KZN Department of Education awaiting finalization and settlement agreement. The disciplinary hearing against the second senior official has been finalized and the sanction received. Chairperson and employer representative has been appointed for the remaining disciplinary hearings, possibly just to really follow up on the nature of the sanctions that have been meted out here. Next slide, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I'm really just taking the committee through page by page like this, because this is as we now complete this investigation, these are important consequence management actions that we would like to continue to monitor. The next slide is 53. Umgeni, still in KZN, is one senior manager. The matter has been received by the mayor and has been tabled before the municipal, which resulted in the municipal manager being placed on suspension. So we will follow up to ensure that the disciplinary process is taken. Limpopo Department of Health, five senior managers and middle managers, we are informed that the disciplinary processes are underway. Still in Limpopo, four further officials, we are informed that the disciplinary processes are underway. In the Sekhukhune district, still in Limpopo, we made five referrals of senior and middle managers. Here, we were informed that the preliminary investigation by the municipality suggested that one of the officials could not be held liable on the grounds that he has advised the team to follow the STM process, and the same official resigned. The disciplinary proceedings have been instituted against the others. One more official resigned before being served with a letter of suspension. Again, we monitor those to ensure that where there are resignations, we take appropriate steps. The next ones are in Mpumalanga, middle management, 11 of them. We've requested feedback in terms of where they are with all of this, and we are still awaiting update. 54, slide 54. Mpumalanga Economic Growth, we've referred two senior and middle managers. The officials were found not guilty and on the 31st of August 2021. Mpumalanga again, economic growth, the officials were found not guilty on the 31st of August. Again, Mpumalanga Economic Growth Agency, the middle manager, the first appearance was in August. The matter has been postponed for witnesses to testify. We'll follow up on what became of that. Still in Mpumalanga, six more officials, the Mpumalanga Department of Health. The matter was postponed. It looks like the disciplinary process started there. The reason for the postponement is that the official has declared a dispute. Number 55, this section is almost complete. In the Mpumalanga Department of Arts and Culture, four referrals at the level of senior management. The HOD has informed us that both officials received a written warning. There's two officials to go. City of Matosan in the Northwest, one official, senior manager, the official has resigned from the municipality. A criminal case was referred to NPA on the 26th of August, which we need to follow on. Again, City of Matosan, a middle manager. The manager is currently on precautionary suspension. The disciplinary hearing has been postponed, so we'll follow up on what happens to that. Northwest Department of Education, about three officials. Disciplinary hearing of one of has been finalized and he was dismissed on the 24th of September. The hearing for the other two officials is underway. Again, in Northwest, two middle managers and junior official. The disciplinary hearings against one official commenced. The official was found guilty and chairperson pronounced that the official should be dismissed as the sanction. The official has been given about 5 days to dispute that. Otherwise, the sanction is that of dismissal. Slide 56. Still in the Northwest Department of Health, one official at middle managers, official left Northwest Department because his contract had expired. Therefore, the disciplinary action could not be taken. Again, as we always say, we referred the matters to the NPA for criminal prosecution. In JB Max, one junior official, the official was given final warning after he was found guilty. Still in JB Max, one middle manager. We have been informed that we contacted the law firm who has been appointed to deal with this. We are waiting for the municipality to confirm the date of the hearing. Still in JB Max, senior manager. The disciplinary hearing is underway and the SIU, we're waiting for the outcome. Again, still in Northwest Ratlo local municipality, we are informed the executive mayor requested a copy of the disciplinary file against one official because the file has been misplaced. So this really goes to indicate in some instances the seriousness with which these matters are taken, but we did produce another file and give it to them. We are now waiting for a feedback on the commencement of the disciplinary hearing. The last slide, 57, on this matters is the National Department of Forestry, where we referred one official at senior management. The investigating officer of SIU testified at the disciplinary hearing. The matter is due to proceed again on the 6th of December, which was yesterday. We'll follow up. So, Chair, this is the last part of the referrals for disciplinary action. And if you look at the number of the officials, of course, they vary from various levels, junior to senior management. As at the previous report, we reported 127, and the new referrals for the period under which we are reporting today is 15. That takes the grand total to about 142. This is really quite a high number, and these matters have to be instituted and conducted speedily so that there is a clear demonstration of consequence management in this area. Honorable Chair, the next slides still deal with the consequence management, particularly referring to the referrals to the NPA. If you go to slide number 58, this is now where we have picked up evidence pointing to criminal action and matters have been referred to the NPA. These on slide 58, it's new matters that we have referred to NPA. We've referred about 20 and this would vary from private companies to state officials. As you can see in the Eastern Cape, we refer two officials, which is an entity and the director thereof. Eastern Cape, again, two entity and a director. Houghton Department of Health, we referred about 13 referrals in the city of Johannesburg, one, and Limpopo, two. Various charges that we were of the view that the evidence is pointing to, including charges of failure to comply with the Municipal Finance Management Act or the Public Finance Management Act, over and above common law criminal offenses of fraud, and of course the statutory one of corruption. So, Chair, on the extreme right, there are updates. In the main, the update really goes to indicate that the matters are receiving attention. As you can see at the top one there, there have been arrests of the directors of the company, and they already appeared in court. And the case was remanded to the 28th of November. The team would obviously still have to follow up on what became on the 28th of November. And the other cases, the NPA acknowledged a receipt of the referrals, and of course indicating that they are considering the evidence that have been referred. On the matters which we referred to before, Honorable Chair, and without really going through them one by one, they are on slide number 59 to slide number 65. On engaging with our colleagues at the NPA, we've been given various feedbacks on these matters, and Chair, the Honorable Committee had called NPA and Hawks before to give an update, and they would prefer themselves to give the status of where these matters are. But we have followed up with them, and we are noting the feedback that they have given us in that column on the right-hand side. And as honorable members would see that the matters are really receiving attention, and we have made it, made that effort. According to the MOU that we've signed with the NPA, to follow up on these cases so that we can ensure that they receive the attention that is deserving. So with your permission, Honorable Chair, we can take questions later. We had reported on these matters before, and NPA, as they would prefer, they would like to really consider these matters and give an update when next they appear at SCOPA. That then takes us to slide number 66. Up to 65 is the NPA referrals, or maybe just to perhaps just to indicate that the previous matters, go to slide 65, please. Just the number of matters. We have referred a total of 148. This was in accordance with the presentation we made previously when we appeared on the 1st of September. But the new referrals, as we indicated, the new referrals on slide number 58 is about 20. And if you add the two, then they give us a grand total of 168. So our expectation is that NPA would consider and make the necessary decisions so that the prosecution would follow. On slide 66, Honorable Chair, it's the number of referrals made for executive action since we appeared. This is the new one that was made for the period under reporting. because at the time it was not covered by the reporting period when we appeared in September. This is one of the outcomes from the Digital Vibes investigation, and it's out there. It's been publicly reported that we had made a referral for an executive action to be taken against the former minister, who subsequently resigned, and no further executive action could be taken. As at the previous reporting, we reported those executive actions that are shown on slide 67. There's only one, which is at the bottom, in the JB Max, that is still showing some delays, and we will really follow up to find out what steps have been taken. And as we say there, on the right-hand side, on the progress to date, the last sentence of that paragraph, we are still waiting feedback from the MEC regarding this matter, and we will follow up on that. Slide number 68. Slide 68, Honorable Chair, as we say, during our investigations, we come across some of these irregularities, which in terms of the Public Finance Management Act or the Municipal Finance Management Act, the accounting authority or the accounting officer should have taken steps to avoid these irregularities. And we are ensuring that the accounting officers or accounting authorities are given the opportunity to explain and account on how is it that these irregularities occurred. We have since sent letters to the relevant accounting officers or accounting authorities where we have investigated and found irregularities. Once we have received all this feedback or letters of response, we will assess the responses and assess for next steps. And the next steps could include referrals of this to the Auditor General of South Africa, because all of this environment really shows a deterioration of some of the control environments. Slide number 69, please. Slide number 69 deals with the referrals for administrative action. These are the new ones that we have referred since we appeared at SCOPA before. In the main, this would include the blacklisting of the service providers that have been found to be in the wrong in the process of investigation. The new ones include from the Free State province about 60 referrals, and those have to do with the SAHPRA, South African Health Product Regulatory Authority. There would have been irregularities in that space. In the Gauteng department, there's been 7 referrals again referred to SAHPRA. Slide 70. In slide number 70, National Department of Health, there were 6 referrals. Again, the acting DG at the time confirmed receiving this, and they are currently dealing with the matter. The previous 2, we have checked that SAHPRA has indeed received them. The last one, which is the new one, in the KZN Department of Education, a request was submitted to the KZN Education for feedback, and they requested the names of the service providers in an email, 26 November. The letters of referrals were resubmitted to the department. So the new ones that have been referred, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, it's about 78 or service providers. Now, this 78, we added it with the previous ones that we reported before. The previous ones that we reported before are covered on slide 71 to slide 75. Slide 75. So the grand total between the new ones and the ones that we reported before is about 274. So Honorable Chair, what really that tells us is that there's quite a number of service providers that have also made themselves guilty of all of these irregularities, and we would like to see action taken. At the previous appearance, one honorable member asked, how long should it really take to blacklist a service provider? That process is subject to an administrative process. The service provider gets to be given an opportunity to respond and so on. And ultimately, depending on the responses, they are then sent to National Treasury to place them on the list of restricted service providers. We have to really follow up and make sure that this happens. Because to date, if I look at all of those, there hasn't really been anyone that has been, the process has been completed and has been blacklisted. Again, the delay causes problems that invariably these service providers could still be doing business with government elsewhere. It's a potential, it's a possibility. So for us to be able to make sure that they don't, they have to be placed on the list of restricted service providers. I proceed now, Honorable Chair, to still deal with some of the outcomes on slide number 76. Slide number 76 and 77. These slides deal with the value of potential cash or assets to be recovered. This 76 and 77 deals with the new ones. And they add up in slide number 77 to about 27 million. These are the areas, Honorable Chair, where there would have been acknowledgement of debt signed in various provinces. There would have been areas where we have made recommendations to the state institutions to recommend that they should withhold payments. This is really to prevent further bleeding by the state, where we have investigated and found that the contracts are irregularly awarded. Of course, that is subject to immediately SIU instituting civil proceedings to declare the contract and set them aside and ensure that we recover the monies that have been lost. So, Chair, on slide number 77, we show the total of all of this potential recoveries. We reported similar potential cash or assets to be recovered as at the last reporting on the 1st of September, and that is on slide 78, 79 and 80. Honorable Chair, some of these potential recoveries would have progressed and found themselves into the civil litigation report that my colleague Dr. Wells would have reported on. For example, where we would have freezed bank accounts, they proceed to the special tribunal and orders are made. So in the orders that have been granted, where we reported on, some of them would have been orders where monies have been forfeited to the state. Now, when it's ultimately forfeited, it's taken out of the potential recovery into the actual. But as at the time of the last reporting, we reported about 444 million worth of this potential recoveries, which is reflected on slide number 80. If you go to slide number 80, please. Slide number 80, Honorable Chair, adds the previous total and the new one that we reported just now, and they bring us to a total of about 471 million. I will proceed, Honorable Chair, to the next slide, which deals with the new matters on the actual cash and or assets recovered. These are the new ones since the last reporting. And again, as the honorable members can see, that all of these are based on the acknowledgement of debt that have been signed. And on the left-hand side, you can see it's a state institutions from Houghton Department of Health, KZN Department of Education, and the others there. So as we reported before, is that in some of these processes, just so that we don't expend or incur costs of litigation, where the people approach and acknowledge that they have committed these irregularities and they are prepared to pay back, we would then proceed with the acknowledgement of debt process and monitor that it gets paid. It gets paid into the SIU trust account, and from there, they are paid back to the state institutions. And on an ongoing basis, the trust account is adequately audited to ensure that these payments are really taken back to the state institutions. This new actual recoveries are added just for reporting purposes to the old ones, which appear on slide 82. Slide 82 is the matters which we reported on before on the actual cash assets recovered. And with adding the new ones, they all add up to about 32.5 million. Those are instant paybacks by those who acknowledge their wrong. But this would just deal with the civil recovery part. As we have reported before, it would not...
Babum TB, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Just 1 second. I know your presentation is some 122 slides.
Yes.
And we have made significant progress. But I'd request that we try and round up the presentation by 11:30, because we still have the sitting this afternoon on the section 25. Yeah.
Okay.
So if you can round it up to at 11:30. I know that it's very long and comprehensive.
Yes.
That
yes, Chair.
That we
thank you. The
issues, but I'm just trying to manage.
Okay.
Time.
Thanks. No, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Then I'll speed up. So we've added the previous ones, and then on slide 83 is really the new potential loss that we have prevented. As we investigate, we also identify areas where we prevent the losses, and we've added the new ones with the old ones which we have prevented. On slide 84, they count up to 114.2 million. Slide 85 deals with the number of contracts that have been set aside. We record them separately. As at the time of the previous reporting, the number of contracts set aside counted up to about 170.4 million. Honorable Chair, then we now go into new matters that have been finalized. And again, without repeating what I've said above, slide number 86, please. Slide number 87, sorry. 87 is the similar picture that we showed before. But the only difference here at the bottom is that we're showing that in matters counting about 57%, the investigations found no irregularities. And in Matters County, about 43%, we found irregularities. No irregularities, 4.2 billion. With irregularities, 3.1 billion, counting up to 7.3 billion. Honorable Chair, I'll just go quickly on the one that the audit, the Honorable Chair needed an update. Honorable Committee, ask for an update on digital vibes. And again, without repeating what we responded to before, from slides 88 up to 105, it's the digital vibes update. Up from slide 88 up to slide 99, we've given that report before. In the interest of time, we'll not repeat it. I will just give updates from slide number 99. And again, just summarizing that update is that there are various civil litigations going on. The former minister has challenged the outcome and the report of the SIU. That matter is the subject of a review. We are defending that matter, and it has various stages of the civil litigation. And there was also another person who challenged SIU, saying in the process of the digital vibes investigation, he felt that he was pointed out, and he felt that he could institute action for damages. But as you can see at the bottom there, that he has since withdrawn his application at the Special Tribunal. So as we sit today, that matter is withdrawn from the Special Tribunal. The next slide, again, is really just an update on all of these joinder applications in the process of the civil litigation. Honorable Chair, I won't go through it in details. Suffice to say that at this stage, the civil litigation process is underway, and we will conduct it in accordance with the rules of the Special Tribunal and the rules of the law to make sure that we defend and cancel all these contracts and recover all those monies that we need to recover. And then up to slide number 105, then is the outcomes that we reported before, without repeating them. But Chair, I need to just indicate here that we have noted that there has been further reports or further allegations that have been reported in this regard. When we submitted the final report of Digital Vibes end of June, we did say that if there are further evidence that comes up, we will investigate and give a report. So that investigation is still underway, and whenever the investigation is finalized, we'll give the appropriate report. Honorable Chair, I see there's 13 minutes left to 12:30. The next slides really deal with the content of matters that have been finalized. Honorable Chair, at this stage, going through them one by one is not really a lot. The honorable members would have read through those that indicate the matters that have been finalized in this period of reporting. They vary from the Gauteng province. And then there's also there's quite a number from Gauteng province, and then National Department, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo and Mpumalanga provinces, including Western Cape province. Perhaps share just a quick one on the Western Cape province. The Western Cape provincial head informs me yesterday that there has been positive moves. There's people who have been arrested in the few minutes that are left. We won't use up the whole 12 minutes. This would then be the end of the presentation. I hope my colleague from the Western Cape is online. He can give the Honorable Committee the update on some of these Western Cape matters where there has been arrests made. I think few days back, which we were pleased about. Mr. Liza, are you able to give that quick update? No. Honorable Chair, it doesn't look like Mr. Liza is online, but suffice to say, what he informed me that in one of these matters, I think it's this one on the Canaan Land Local Municipality, there has been arrests that have been made a few days back. And we are really pleased about that, and we'll support that criminal investigation process and support the process to ensure that the people are adequately and effectively prosecuted. Honorable Chair, with your permission, this brings us to the end of our presentation. We are ready to take questions, and my colleagues from the provincial heads of various provinces are in attendance. They can assist with the responses of the questions. Thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity to present to the Honorable Committee.
Okay. Thank you very much, HOU. Right, quite a number of substantive matters have been raised, colleagues. I've got a few that I'm going to flag at the end, with only just the very serious concern around the NPA related matters. I hear the suggestion that we must call them and that they would want to report themselves. I'm not holding my breath, on that matter. The issue of progress insofar as the NPA is concerned leaves very little to be desired, to say the very least. And one would really be gearing up for a presentation where very little detail will come up, with citations of all sorts of things insofar as detail is concerned. But it remains a fundamental concern that over 120-130 matters really are with the NPA, and we are just not seeing the needle moving. I think that becomes the biggest indictment on these very comprehensive investigations that the SIU does. And then there's just no movement insofar as the NPA is concerned. But fair enough, we can call them and listen to whatever they have to say. And if there's any progress, we'll hear that. But like I'm saying, I'm not holding my breath. All right, Honorable Van Meenen, over to you. Your hand was up first, and colleagues, please indicate when you wish to speak. Honorable Van Meenen, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. There is a great deal that could be discussed, and this is a very intense and dense presentation. I really want to thank the SIU very much for the work they're doing. However, I just want to touch on a couple of issues. Firstly, I'd like to say that I actually very much support you, Chair, in the issue of trying to get the NPA to present to us. I think that ramifications are something that are very, very important and something South African people expect to see. But my issues specifically relate to the first part of the presentation, the door-to-door matter, talking about the rescission. I think if I saw correctly, it was a default judgment. I would just like to know the basis for the application for rescission, because it really is going to prolong matters if we're going to see default judgments followed by applications to rescind, et cetera, et cetera. Second matter, the Bight Bridge, Caledon matter. The presentation was jumped around a bit at that point. Can people just clarify for me, please, exactly what's happening with that matter? I think it's very important that we also understand exactly how events are unfolding there. It does seem to have a lot of legal theater going on at the moment, and I think we need clarity with that. And then also in terms of the monies actually being reclaimed, I just want to know in terms of the quantum, what is subject to a court order at this point, and what steps are in fact being taken to reclaim those monies? Thanks very much.
Let's get responses to that. Honorable Mendes, stand by.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll request my colleague, Dr. Wells, to respond.
Thank you, Honorable Chair Advocate Matibi and the Honorable Members. Thank you for the question. The rescission of judgment, or let me just get to the door-to-door. There was a default judgment granted, but the applicant then, the respondent then approached the tribunal and noted certain aspects in terms of why they failed to be represented in the matter. The judge then, on the basis of the motivation for the application, then rescinded the order on that basis. Substantially, it dealt with the legal representation and the failure of the legal representation to adequately and effectively present the case of the respondent. So the update is that application was granted, judgment rescinded, and the tribunal will now award a date. I expect that it will probably be heard in the first quarter or the first term of the next year, 2022. The matter of bait breach, I will appreciate the comment. And the let me just refer to the presentation. Bait breach, it's on slide 33 and 34. Let me just clarify what happened on slide 33. That was number 14. The SIU brought an application to interdict and restrain the respondents. And in terms of claiming for funds, and also then to give an undertaking for the funds that is still owing to them that they want claim that money back. So how we dealt with that application was that it didn't deal with a review. Usually it is accompanied with a review of the setting aside of the contract and then to claim just an equitable relief. So at that point in time, the review application wasn't brought. We then agreed with the respondents that they won't enforce the provisions of the contract or enforce the provisions of the contracts and the remedies within the contract against the department. We dealt with that application in that format, and the agreement was also that the SIU will then bring a review application concerning the hearing and setting aside of the contract. Now, it will be appreciated that I will now refer to slide 34. And this is where the misunderstanding could have been. The review application was then timelessly brought in terms of the agreed order that has just been mentioned. And now the agreed order indicated there will be a review application, and subject to the review application being heard, there was also an interlocutory application questioning the jurisdiction of the tribunal to hear review applications. That interlocutory application was then successfully dealt with, and the tribunal confirmed that the judge confirmed that the tribunal had jurisdiction to hear review applications as well as to order remedies in terms of 217 of the Constitution. Now, the next issue that had to be dealt with was the review per se. That application was heard on the 4th to the 8th October 2021. The judgment in that review application has been reserved. I note now that the words judgment reserved have not been inserted. I made a note of it. But I did comment earlier that is what the status is of the review application. To summarize, there was an application to interdict that has been settled, with the main outcome of that being that a SIU must launch and institute a review application. The review application was instituted. a jurisdictional point was taken by the respondent. That was dealt with first, and then the review application, which was subsequently heard, and now judgment is reserved in that particular case. There is a third question of actual orders, and I tried briefly to explain the nature of orders that is recorded in the slides. And I will refer quickly, without going into much detail, that the orders granted are a myriad of, it includes the setting aside of the contract, which is the value. And I wanted to use an example. If we go to slide 43, and we deal with number one. So the contract was set aside, the contract value was 10 million, but the department haven't paid it out, so they are just interdicted from paying it out. So just to answer the question, does this orders translate into actual, and what would be the actual? The actual would be litigated. So most of these matters are being litigated upon to establish just and equitable relief. So most of the orders that are mentioned here would either be the setting aside of the contract, which is the contract value, or it will be the restraint of a pension fund, which would be number 8 on page on slide 44, which would be the value of the pension fund benefits. But it's not necessarily the conclusion of the matter, because we had to issue summons to recover the damages, which is in excess of 100,000 rand. And that is set out in the other matters under the heading instituted, matters instituted in the special tribunal. Chair, so to summarize, the orders granted under slide 42 would relate to the value of the contracts, which is set aside. It can refer to the restraint of pension benefits, as I stated. And it can also mean that the money has been preserved, but that is not fortunately under the hearing. So I hope I've clarified it. The actual values are subject to litigation. For example, like I mentioned under 8, litigation will, that 100,000 is under, it is preserved, it is restrained, but there are pending, there is pending litigation that we will have to prove what is just and fair, or the losses that the department suffered. Thank you. I will hand back to Advocate Pativi.
Just to add on, and perhaps as we now go to the final report, we should clearly just indicate what we refer to really as money in the bank. Because more often, when orders are granted, the next part is those orders have to be executed. And Dr. Wells and his team are focusing on that part. But just to, let me just make another demonstration. If you go on to slide number 84, which shows loss prevented. Loss prevented would be monies that are not paid out. And as we indicated there, that we've calculated those matters to count up to about 114 million. So, and the losses get prevented under various circumstances. It's either we indicate to the state institution that we have found irregularities here, don't pay out this monies anymore, subject to us going to the special tribunal, cancelling the contract, And now, once the order is given of the cancellation of the contract, these monies would now be certainly or finally prevented from being paid out. The other example, Honorable Van Meenen, could be just to point out, if you go to slide number 81 and 82, this refers to really actual recoveries. And these are subject to, you know, the AOG process. We've bucketed them separately so that we can show another process that gives us money back. Now, on the orders granted, I think a further exercise which we'd need to do, because the orders granted that we are reporting on today, they count up to, I don't think we calculated the grand total there. They count up to about 174.5 million. So these orders granted, I think they're on slide 42. Now, the next exercise would be, as Dr. Wells says now, what is the nature of the order that has been granted? And we are trying to explain it in those slide 43. We are trying to explain it in all of those next steps in terms of what has really been the order. Is the order relating to the contract payment or not? If it relates to contract payment, then the nature of the order could be an interdict, for example, which interdicts the department from further payment. And the main case has to go to the special tribunal to finalize the process where now the monies are totally not paid out. The example made by my colleague, Dr. Wells, is that in that Eastern Cape FAPCOM matter, is that scooter gate, or so-called scooter gate. In fact, when we met with the provincial leadership, they had indicated that the money was not paid out, but we went to the special tribunal to ensure that the contract itself, because there was still a legal risk if we just leave it. We had to make sure that the contract itself is cancelled, and then we are definitely sure from a legal perspective that these monies will not be paid at all. And then the next one, the door-to-door, I think Honorable Van Meenen is really correct that from a legal perspective, we need to really ensure that where there has been orders that have been granted, the reasons for rescission of judgment, of course, it's subject to adjudication by the presiding officer, whether the decision has to be rescinded or not. And the parties get to give reasons why, and then the court decides. But of course, we are vigilant in terms of ensuring that those orders do not just be granted willy-nilly. So what we really indicated is that while these matters are really being adjudicated, as we indicate, we need to extract areas where we are sure that these monies are being paid back, like we've shown on the actual cash or assets recovered, 32 million paid back. In the loss prevented, 114 million prevented, subject to the special tribunal adjudication. And then again on the orders granted, counting up to 174 million, but we have to make sure that all of those other processes that needs to be followed are followed and clearly indicate what is the ultimate amount that goes back into the state coffers. I thought I would just add on what my colleague had said, Honorable Chair. Not sure if there would still be further questions.
All right, thank you very much, HOU and Dr. Wells. Right, Honorable Van Meenen, are you good with that? And then we can go to Honorable Mente.
I'm fine.
Thanks, BVM. All right, Honorable Mente, Honorable Hadebe, stand by.
Thank you, Che. No, Che, Advocate Mthibi has explained a lot of some of the areas around, but I wanted now to check what then becomes a recourse when they have presented these findings to a department, like the case of Free State was indicating, where the department insists that there is no irregularity and they are not comfortable with that. Not just they are not comfortable because of instincts, they are not comfortable because of evidence presented and the finding thereof, but the department insists that there's nothing wrong. And then on the second one, how do they deal with the matter of the NPA cases that are taking forever to be dealt with? Because right now it looks like the issue of the PPE is not getting the seriousness it deserves. People are not being prosecuted successfully. There is some laissez-faire attitude around it from departments as well as the NPA. I see some cases have remand dates and all of that. But what do they do to ensure that there is a successful prosecution of all the culprits as well as the departments are doing something? What becomes a recourse from their own side? Thank you.
Right, thanks, Honorable Mente. HO, you and your team. Mam Dolasha noted.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Mente. In cases where we have referred matters to the state institutions for action to be taken. For example, in that case where we have referred a case and they are saying, having looked at our referral, they are satisfied that the officials acted within their bounds. So we do re-engage with them. But of course, because it's an administrative decision that they take, we reserve the right that we could review that decision. And again, it's going to follow a review process to review the same decision not to act so that appropriate action can be taken. That is the immediate process that that we follow based on the legal framework. We haven't really seen quite a lot of those pronouncements, but wherever they rear their heads, we look at the rationale, and if we are not satisfied, our legal team would of course engage so that we can take steps to review that administrative action of refusing to act against the officials. On the NPA matters, Honorable Mente, we really do our best, and our best is done within the MOU that we have signed with NPA. In that MOU, there's a requirement that the both teams have to review all the cases that we have referred and review where they are. What is it that the NPA still requires from our side? If there is still further evidence that they require, we'll probably provide it. But what has happened as a practice is that where there's further evidence required, the NPA would refer the matters to the DPCI. But in that regard, we have decided now to bring the DPCI into the MOU so that they also receive these, we copy them on the referrals to the NPA, so that by law, we comply with the law and refer to NPA, we copy GPCI, because there's an administrative process of opening a docket, a case number and all of that, so that NPA would be satisfied that all of those have been done. And if there's a need for any further evidence that's required, we work closely with the DPCI to make sure that we provide MPA with all what they need. So we then, of course, provide all that and then require MPA apparently to make the decision ultimate. As we have indicated, there's various updates in those matters that we have received, but we will continue to follow up in the context of the MOU that we have. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. All right, Honorable Hadebe with an H.
Thank you, Chair. In welcoming the report, Chair, and the progress made thus far, one is also concerned, Chair. HOU, I was the one who raises issues and concern in relation to the prolonged time it takes to conclude these administrative issues in relation to referrals for blacklisting, Chair. And the report today still paints a very bleak picture. Chair, you have instances of referrals that were referred November 2020. We are in December 2021, a year and a month now. All what you get is that SAPRA has confirmed receipt of referral and they are under consideration. I don't understand, Chair, that to investigate the matter and arrive at the conclusion will take less time than to consider the matter for blacklisting. There has to be a fundamental a stumbling block that we need to be aware of, which made this consideration to take more than a year. It can't take less time to investigate and take more time to consider whether or not to blacklist. HOU, what is it that they are considering that we don't know? We're talking a grand total of 274 referrals. 13 months to date, we are still told what we were told in September, in June, that the matters are under consideration. It can be, Chair. Are these companies still continuing submitting bid proposals? Are they still benefiting from the state? Are they still getting considered as future and new projects are unfolding? Can we get that report? Perhaps that could also assist. Is there no way of ensuring that while you are dealing with this consideration, I know the principle of innocence until proven otherwise, but I think in this case, there has to be a moratorium placed on these companies that they cannot continue getting services from the state until these cases are resolved, Chair. That is my concern. The second aspect, Chair, of my discomfort, it's in relation to slide, starting from 66 and 67, referrals for an executive action. When you refer these for executive action, were you meaning that these MECs must be removed? Because as soon as they resign or they are discharged, there is no further consequence or action attached to it. In your view, is it good enough for the MEC to be released from his or her duty without any consequence? I'm raising this based on what you said on your slide 68, holding accounting officers and accounting authorities accountable. I don't think resigning on its own is a fair and suitable, adequate punishment compared to the damage caused to the reputation of government, reputation of the department and the organization, those that were deployed from. So from your recommendation, are you satisfied with the resignation only? Thank you, Chair. Let me submarine for now.
Right. Thank you very much, Honorable Adebe. Abum TV, on that submarining note, let's hand over to you. Mam Dolashe, stand by.
No, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Hadebe, we really share the same concerns around the slow pace at which companies or the process of blacklisting is unfolding, including other processes where we have referred them to the other regulators. For example, referring to SAPRA, referring to the Competition Commission. Honorable Chair, the best we can do, the best we can do in the circumstances, this is almost those areas where, you know, the process is not really end-to-end handled by the SIU. An example of an end-to-end process handled by the SIU is the litigation process, where we handle the matters from beginning to the end. In all of these matters where we hand over, we are really seeing sort of some inefficiencies creeping in. But of course, they've got the authority to deal with these matters. In fact, I am really tempted to say, in a similar way that the Honorable Committee indicated that they would approach the state institutions to check and find out why they're not acting on the officials in their disciplinary process, the Honorable Committee could probably also consider approaching these regulators, SAPRA, Competition Commission, but in the main also the state institutions that we have referred to. But in terms of the process, it is the state institution which had appointed this service provider to take action and blacklist them. But Honorable Chair, I don't want to just leave it there. I would like to for the committee to give us probably few days, and I'm saying few days, probably until Friday, where we can ourselves also just look at the what they call legal standing, whether we could have the legal standing of taking these matters ourselves as an interested party, whether can't we as an interested party institute this this administrative process. But of course that would be subject to legal advice by our committees, because if we are to be able to assist and be part of the process to process these administrative actions, we will really put our efforts behind that and make sure that they are actioned quickly. That is an option which we can consider, whether we would have what's called the locus standi, legal standing, to institute these administrative actions ourselves, rather than referring, or we could do it together with the state institutions. That is the option that we can consider and report back to the committee. In terms of doing a check whether these companies are doing further business with the state, that we can check and report back to the committee. We'll obviously have to go through the database and check with the National Treasury and then report back to the honorable members. That's the best we can really do, Honorable Hadebe, because honestly, the longer we delay in dealing with this blacklisting and other regulatory interventions, then it really just sends a wrong message to these companies that are involved, and the potential is there that they might still be doing business with the state elsewhere, and that is what we want to stop. So we offer, Honorable Chair, number one, we will consider the option whether we could, on a legal basis, have a standing to do this administrative process as SIU, alternatively together with the state institutions relevant, and then we will check if these companies are still doing business with the state. With regard to the executive authorities, it is my view that a resignation is not enough. We should be consistent when we deal with these issues of resignation. We are treating everyone the same way. As a principle, a resignation should not absolve anyone, whether you're an official or an executive authority. It should not absolve you from criminal process where there's evidence pointing to criminality. It should not absolve you from a civil litigation where there's evidence pointing that you would have participated in the damages and the losses caused, suffered by the state. And there are examples where these former executive authorities are cited in the court papers. We've cited them at the special tribunal in the cases where we are seeking to set the contract aside and recover the monies. There's also reference to NPA with regard to evidence that points to criminal action on this executive authorities. So just to answer the question, we are of the view that the same way we treat resignation at officials level, we should treat it the same way. It should not absolve anyone from any further actions, civilly or criminally. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, HOU. Ma'am Dolasha, over to you, ma.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good day to you, colleagues, and good day to Advocate Mutibi and his team. Once again, Chair, I want to appreciate the extensive reports that we are receiving today. It is always the case. Appreciate the progress made since the last presentation, Chair. Indeed, a lot of work is being done here. Chair, Honorable Begin did covered me insofar as the last point from Advocate Kibi. Mutibi, mine would be to say where that has happened, where a person has just resigned and nothing has taken place thereafter, let then the scoper come in to get more information for whoever is responsible to say why is that did not happen, why did you allow that to happen for a person to be allowed to resign and no other action was taken place, especially when there is evidence that that person was involved in corruption in one way or the other. Two, Chair, I'm happy that the team does not report any legal stumbling blocks, so they can still carry on with their work. But I'm worried with the NPA. Their moves are very slow, as other members are saying. How I wish, Chair, we can also get the NPA for them just to come and take us through on this work of the PPE in particular, and so that we can get to hear from them what are their frustrations. If there are any legal frustrations, we can then come in to assist. Anything else that might be a problem, we must be informed so that we can be of assistance in as far as that is concerned. The second one, Chair, is that when the referrals are in the Premier's office, and there's much that is taking place in that regard, or as we are getting to hear that those people are not in the full-time employment of government, they are service providers or they are whatever, I guess those premiers must be brought to before the SCOPA, Chair, for them to give us more information and account themselves on what exactly are they doing, because I know for a fact that all premiers in their state of the province, they committed and recommitted to fight corruption. So it cannot be them that will allow the corruption to take place under their watch. So let them bring before us so that they can explain to us and be made aware of the fact that if themselves are beginning to be a stumbling block insofar as fighting corruption is concerned, they must know that within no time they're going to be liable. I heard this from the Eastern Cape as well as Free State, where in some cases in Free State, Advocate Mutibi is reporting that the disciplinary process is still being considered. How long must that take place? My fear is here, Chair, if you take forever, I mean, legally speaking, you might not be able to implement it, given the timelines that are legally put black and white insofar as disciplinary processes are concerned. So I really would want to emphasize the fact that when the team reports to us, like it is the case today, that there are frustrations done by the people who are political heads or officials, let those people be brought before us so that we assist the SIU in doing their work. They are doing a lot, but there are some things that we need to come in to come and assist, Chair, so that we can really be able to say in a year's time, we are able to report to say, hey, this is how far we have managed to go in fighting corruption, especially in the level of the PPE. The society is beginning to be worried with the pace, Chair. So hence I am saying we need to bring everybody before us. I know we might not be able to do it this year, but we can do it the early, we do it in the following year, the better. All the institutions that are like SAPRA in checking whether people must be blackmailed or so, I am not sure on the excuse that they are putting. I think like Advocate Motivi is suggesting, let them come before us with Treasury. Let them explain to us why is that the case, what frustrations do they have, how are they going to resolve those. Because we know we are South Africans, Chair. We know that those companies are still involved in business with the same government that they are alleged to have defrauded. This is all done by human beings, Chair. So there's no machine that is involved here. So if somebody is not doing his or her job, let's get to hear that as COPPA and be able to talk with the concerned person, and he or she must give us why is she sitting or occupying the position that they are occupying if they are unable to do their work. It cannot take more than a year, Chair, to come to a conclusion. I hear what Advocate Matibi is saying, if it was in their hands, and in this case, it's not. We as COPPA, we've got every power to call before us anybody who is seen to be involved or not doing anything insofar as corruption is concerned. And lastly, Chair, in the case of this blackmail, where are other institutions that are alleged to be fighting corruption? Because this is where majority of corruption is taking place. It is there where huge companies are taking advantage of the systems that don't exist in our government and really do as they wish. If the SIU has been able to pick that up, but we're still unable to blackmail them, it means all that is being done by SIU and anybody else, because what else are you going to do if those people are allowed to get in business with government, even though there's this that it has been picked up that they might be involved in corruption. So I want to put what Advocate Mutibi is saying as a recommendation to the committee so that we can consider all that and bring it to us and bring those people before us so that they can tell us why is this the case and how are they going to turn things around and be given timelines. I don't think we should waste time by asking the SIU. They've done their part. Other government entities must play the ball. And in this case, we see and recognize that not everybody is doing so. So let them be brought before us so that we can get the total picture. Stumbling block in making sure that we eradicate corruption in South Africa, especially when it comes to COVID-19 and EPP saga. I think the society is yearning to get a response that there are people who are putting their orange overalls now for the reason that they are involved in corruption. So that will be my humble request, Chair, and really congratulate the SIU on the work that they always do and report that they always bring into our attention. Thank you very much, Chair.
Mamdulasha, thank you very much. I just wanna, if I can just build on that, just one aspect, and then I'll come in with my questions shortly. You see, the major challenge with the South African economy and business growth trajectory is an over-reliance on the tendering system and a mushrooming of businesses through just like a popcorn kind of thing that willy-nilly overnight a business is registered and somewhat can begin to function. And I'm certainly not taking away from the need of a diversification of the market and of businesses and the offering of business opportunities to everyone. Why I raise this is precisely on along the lines of what Mamdulasha is saying, that businesses are run by people, and blacklisting Mkhuleko's one company and not blacklisting the other five, I therefore still remain within the system. And the vulnerabilities of the system continue to be exploited because we are not dealing with individuals, which is something we need to consider. So I'm framing it in that way, Babumtibi, to gauge your sense of the need to blacklist people who are party to the so-called companies that are there. I mean, some of these companies you can't even trace to a physical address. They are run from a bag in a restaurant in a mall, and if there's no network there, they move on to the next one, which has got coverage. And so the major, major challenge is the tendering system, which is not building up state capability or business capability for that matter. It's a quick money-making scheme, which has got poor if next to zero checks and balances, and does not ensure business and economic and developmental continuity and sustainability and viability. It's a major, major problem. Because seated here now, I can register a business, and I'll be done by this afternoon, and I'll be tendering tomorrow. And if you are connected, you will be receiving a tender by Friday. So the credibility and integrity of businesses has not been checked, the legitimacy, to the extent to which the necessary knowledge, skills, and expertise are first sidelined by political connections, expediency, and proximity, and derailing the developmental agenda. It's a huge risk. And is widespread and creating an unnecessary presence of middlemen and cost escalations and inflations, where ordinarily where masks should cost us 10 rand as a state, we may have found instances where it costs you 50 rand because we are beneficiating incorrectly. We are not going to grow the economy by just throwing money at so-called businesses like it's falling from trees. And so that's the dilemma, Advocate Ntibi, I'm really placing at the table. Because I think it requires a fundamental assessment of the business integrity at play currently. And whether, and this I would imagine is something you must consider in your final report,
and whether the tendering system in its current structure is not an aider and a better of the things that we are currently seeing right now. It's a fundamental challenge, really. And so I'm really saying maybe we need to blacklist people to push back on the frontiers of the willy-nilly capability to be blacklisted today with company X and resurface tomorrow, mushroom tomorrow, popcorn tomorrow, with a new business registration, and then it continues as business as usual, as if I have not been party to a business that has been to the detriment of the state's developmental agenda and has been at the center of corruption. So I'll come back with other issues, but I thought Mamdulasha raises a fundamental point, which I think requires us to revisit the current arrangement. Advocate Ntivi, over to you.
Oh, thank you very much, Chair. I think, as the Chair acknowledges, Honorable Dolasha, we appreciate the kind words of encouragement, and we'll continue on that trajectory of doing our work without fear, favor, or prejudice, and hold those who are responsible to account, including following up on those where we have now handed over the evidence. Because we are an interested party. The state has spent resources, state in the form of SIU. When we investigate, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we do incur resources. We spend, there's money spent, and that is why we've previously reported on what it costs to investigate. And that is why when we engage with our colleagues, where there is no need or where there's a need for further investigation, it would be preferable or in fact ideal to refer it back to SIU so that we can address those evidence issues and send it back for decision. But the issue raised about the tendering system, we are in the final report, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we will of course make that comment in the context of the public procurement bill that is now underway. That's been considered, but of course specifically, as you call on us to do, Chair, to just really raise squarely around the issue of the tender system, based on the experience that we are gathering, not only in the PPE investigations, across all other investigations that we investigate, we really come across a whole number of irregularities and corrupt activities around the procurement system. And as we have said before, almost about 95 or so percent of our investigations across SIU are focused on investigating procurement processes, irregular procurement processes. And the focus of all of these corrupt individuals and entities is focused on the procurement system for obvious reasons, because that's where the fiscus is. That's where the purse and the money is. Now, We will pronounce ourselves around that. There's a really a quite a serious measure of rethink and review of that system that is required, so that appropriate measures are put in place to avoid all of this going forward. Now, on the blacklisting process, I really agree with you, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members, and Honorable Dolasha makes a comment around holding these ones that are responsible for ensuring that the process of blacklisting happens to account. But Chair, you're raising an issue fundamental on the nature of blacklisting. But we should consider blacklisting the directors of these companies or individuals in these companies. And here, that really reminds me of a legal concept that is well established in the company's law relating to unveiling or lifting the corporate veil. And that concept applies where a company has conducted irregularities and the court had to decide whether to lift or uplift the corporate veil under which these directors more often hide behind. Lifting the corporate veil and going directly to the directors to ensure that they are also held to account. Hence, the concepts like declaring the directors delinquent and so on. But in this regard, we will really take that call to heart, Honorable Chair, with the legal team internally, review this blacklisting process. And I am of the view that there is an opportunity here to ensure that we also demonstrate accountability on the directors. Because Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, it is not far-fetched, as the Honorable Chair says, that you would blacklist a company and the director related would now go and recreate a company elsewhere and still continue to do business. So we take that to heart, Chair. We will look at it internally and then pronounce and obviously cite the committee in terms of what our views are as we contribute to the final report. Reliance on the tendering system. Yes, I think that's really part and parcel of just pronouncing on the risks around that we have observed during our investigation. The risks around this tendering system and how is it that they can be mitigated in our view, and then of course contribute to the legislative process of reviewing this public procurement legislation. Thank you, Honorable Chair. That's my response.
Thank you very much, Advocate MTV. We certainly look forward to your final report. Just two quick things, and one you've already touched on that I wanted to raise, HOU. Your costs so far that you have incurred with these investigations, how much it is at this point. And I just want to go back to the trust you spoke about, the SIU trust, to check how much is there already. I may have missed that. And I think, HOU, since we have you here, I think it would be important that you make a comment on the issues surrounding the SIU. There is a public protector investigation into the SIU. And I just think the one thing one would want to gauge is whether you are cooperating with that investigation, so that we do not keep it in the shadows, because we must at all times guard the fundamental integrity of the SIU. The guard of the garden itself must be beyond reproach. And I think the issues that have been raised are very, very serious. And so I think a comment in that regard, let me just leave it at that. So just those three things on my side, and then we will bring it to a conclusion, colleagues. Babu Mtivi, over to you.
No, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, with regard to the costs, and the SIU trust, May I request the Honorable Committee that to give us, you can give us a few days and give us a deadline where we can come back to the committee in writing on where the cost, when I checked with the team when we prepared this presentation, would not have really materially differed from the previous ones we reported. But of course, we need to indicate that to the committee. We will do so, and then also indicate the status of the SIU trust account. If I can humbly request the committee to give us the date, it shouldn't take long for us to compile that specific deadline. I haven't checked with the with our colleagues, particularly the finance department, but if we do our best, we can. Today is Tuesday. We can come back on Friday, Honourable Chair, and submit.
Friday is fine.
We will try our best to come back on Friday to submit.
No, that's fine. Friday is fine.
Chair, with regard to the last point, yes, there is an investigation that the public protector is conducting, and that investigation is based in the main on a letter that was written by a former SIU employee. That letter was written around August of this year. And that letter was referred also to our executive authority, the minister, and it was also referred to the president. As we speak, our minister has had the opportunity to also investigate that, and the minister has given us a feedback of the outcome of the investigation. Suffice to say that at this stage, the letter has now gone to the public protector. When we look at it, it's the same letter that was issued in August, and it also, I think, got to find its way into the Sunday Times at the time, and we responded to the Sunday Times. We responded, we cooperated with the process by our minister. We are now cooperating with the public protector. Honorable Chair, we are satisfied, and I can guarantee this to the Honorable Committee, that we put integrity at the center of what we do. Administration, good administration and good governance is at the center of what we do. And we are, just a correction, the letter was in August of 2020, not this year. 2020 was the letter which was written by this former SIU executive. So all of the contents of that letter, we are satisfied that it's baseless. It's really meant to tarnish the name of SIU and our name. The letter refers to some of the former employees of SIU who have since left. But at this stage, Honorable Chair, I think without going into those merits, we will cooperate with the public protector. We believe that we will be able to respond to each and every allegation there and show that the allegations are baseless and without any basis. And we will execute or extricate ourselves from there. And with regard to the letter also contains that issue that I think even the Honorable Committee asked about it, the allegations around the PPE procurement, I think it was to the value of about 36,000 rand that was conducted at SIU. The Auditor General looked at that. The Auditor General looked at it and they pronounced that there are no irregularities. So we are satisfied, Honorable Chair, that we will be able to demonstrate beyond any reasonable doubt that there are no irregularities, there are no issues as in that letter that was sent to the public protector. Thank you.
All right, Tom, thank you very much, each of you. All right, we'll await the outcome of that. Final point. When we last met, when we were dealing with the UIF-related matters with the Department of Employment and Labour, we had asked you that you meet within 10 days. Is that meeting been held? Well, within 10 days then, has that meeting been held or has a date been set on that one?
But thank you, Honourable Chair. We reached out to the UIF, in particular, the acting commissioner. The meeting has been held. It was held last week, Friday.
Right.
My colleague, Mr. Lekgetho, can, I think it's appropriate that he adds on. And in fact, what transpired in that meeting is that the acting commissioner, I can't recall the name now,
yeah,
but it's the one who was making public statements to the committee that SIU had not investigated those 6,000 employees. He has in that meeting, I'm informed, and Mr. Lekgetho can come in, he has apologized, and we have demonstrated to him that SIU has investigated those matters. So I was, of course, and thank you for raising it, Honorable Chair, I was quite cautious in raising it in the context that we are here today for PPE. But no, I'm really happy that the Chair has raised it. We are able to put it out. But Chair, the meeting has happened and we have demonstrated to them that we investigated. We really await a time when we could reappear, where they can put it on record publicly that we have demonstrated that we have investigated those cases. Thank you.
It's fine. I think what is outstanding then, since the meeting has set, was the report that we wanted from that. We note the comments that have been made by yourself. So we'll await that briefing report, which we had asked should follow once the meeting had set. And then I think we'll take the matter forward from there, because I just think it's important we provide clarity on these issues as to avoid public confusion and not to create a trust deficit where none shouldn't exist, really, insofar as state institutions are concerned. So, right, fine, I'll read that report. Let me take this opportunity then, colleagues, to thank you very much. I think what we should do, and I take the suggestion as Honorable Hadebe has raised and Honorable Dolashe and Honorable Mente, in particular, on so far as the follow-ups with the departments and entities is concerned. But I think let's take that forward once we have met with the presidency tomorrow evening. Because as we've maintained before, these reports go there. They are submitted to the presidency. And I've received communication from the acting minister in the presidency indicating that they've not received a final report and that the reports before us, the six progress reports now that the SIU has presented are not final reports and therefore they're not in a position to speak on those. I fundamentally hold a different view and they wanted us to postpone that meeting. I fundamentally believe that the SIU has in the 6 reports made findings which are final, and action is required, even if you may call it progress action for lack of a better phrase. Action is required. And therefore, for us to then wait and want to deal with these things at the end of the process, I find would be a dereliction of duty, and in itself would be reckless and irresponsible. And therefore, I've made the determination that the meeting tomorrow must proceed, tomorrow evening, and for the presidency, whom the reports go to, should be able to, as do all other SIU reports as per proclamation, but with this particular focus on the PPEs. We need to know the action steps and implementation program that they have in receiving these reports. Otherwise, it becomes fruitless and wasteful expenditure to commission investigations. And when you receive the reports, as the custodian of the report, you don't act on it. So the kicking for touch, which I see now, is one which I think does not set us in good stead. So I think tomorrow evening, colleagues, let's get that update report. And then from there, we schedule as we have suggested. And I would imagine we'd need to set aside a week for that, given the long list of departments and municipalities and entities that we need to interact with. I think, Sisintando, can you go back to all the SIU reports and working with the SIU, pull out succinctly the focus areas of the consequence management, which had been referred to others, to take it forward so that we can write to all of them and schedule them probably for a week when Parliament resumes in 2022, I would imagine, maybe in the second week of February. Sister Putben, if we can maybe tentatively place it and go through this once and complete it. But I think let us first get a response from the presidency, whom are the custodians of this. So I think let's thank the SIU for the progress report, the update, and thank them for the good work that they've done. Colleagues, tomorrow we have got a joint meeting with the Standing Committee on the Auditor General to be briefed by the AG on the PFMA audit outcomes. And the suggestion has been, because the AG will be briefing Cabinet in the morning, is that we start at 10:30 or 11. So round about there, that when they're done, they will come to brief us as a committee, because the House will only be sitting at 3 in any case. But I think maybe, colleagues, because in any case we would have met and we've got sets of minutes that we have not adopted and some reports, I would request this, Tombi, can you list them all? And if we can maybe then, colleagues, start tomorrow at 9 and dispense with all our housekeeping matters, the minutes to be adopted and any other reports that we should do, so that come 11 would have used the time productively, because in any case we would have ordinarily started at 9:30. It's just that request that has been there. So Babu Mtibi and your team, siyabonga. Babu Somyo?
Well, Chairman.
Babu.
With unrelated matter, with the SIU report, which is very brilliant report, one would like to speak on the meeting which we're going to be holding with the presidency, as an acting minister. Would there be any value if we do so in absence of the minister concerned, who we know is on the trip with the president? Serve us a good purpose for that meeting. Having asked that question, what is it that makes us not to agree to the postponement of that meeting so that the concerned relevant minister is actually present when we deal with those matters.
Thank you for that. My understanding is that the minister will be back, the minister and the presidency. That was the update I received about over a week ago on this matter, when there was other discussions just about the modalities of the meeting. So that's my understanding. I've not been made aware of them not being available. The second point is that the fundamental issues that Honorable Hadebe raises, insofar as the turnaround time on issues, is that we had held a view before as a committee that the reports are submitted to the president as the where the proclamation comes from, and therefore the implementation in large part of some of the issues resides there. And so we needed to make an assessment and a determination as to whether those reports are implemented upon. And this is the sixth report now that the SIU has presented to us. So that was really the rationale. But of course, the committee is well within its rights to make a determination if we want to postpone and have it when the final report comes out. That would also be in order. But the consideration was this is the sixth report now that would have reached the presidency. And Honorable Hadebe, I think, raises the issue quite sharply. Some of these matters are 13 months old. Some of these matters have been acted upon. Executive action, ministers resigned, and so on and so forth. So that's where it was, Babuson.
No, I don't have an issue, Chair, with the latter part. The issue for me is that the ministry concerned, the minister relevant, should be part of those deliberations. And if we really are in the keeping of value of our own meetings in that way, we need to assure and be confident that indeed the minister is going to be present tomorrow. If he's present, I don't have a problem, because indeed there must be value on our approaches to various areas of our own work. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Babson. Mam Dolas.
Thank you very much. Can I come with the proposal that suggests that if the minister is going to be available on that condition, let's proceed so that we both address your anxiety as well as the slight problems that Honorable Somyo is raising. If the minister is available, let's proceed. If the minister is not going to be available, let's then wait for that time. However, taking to cognizance what you said earlier on, Chair, but also for me to stem the authority of the PC, of the Portfolio Committee, we've been, President has been duck and diving in allowing us to meet with them. And surely that is not so correct, Chair. So it need to be resolved. In fact, it needs to be raised with them. So I will put this proposal, Chair, so that we're able to move forward. Thank you very much.
All right. Now, Honorable Hadebe, then there's a proposal. Honorable Hadebe, thanks, Mam Dolasha. Thanks, Obsom.
Now, thanks, Chair. I wanted to say, if possible, after the end of this meeting, you could ascertain whether or not the minister will be present so that when we sleep, we are fully aware of whether or not the meeting will continue and we prepare accordingly. But indeed, the meeting is needed as soon as yesterday.
All right. No, thank you very much, colleagues. Mom, so Mom Dulashe, thank you for that guidance. Like I said, I have not been made aware that the minister will not be available, but we will contact Sestombi Putben. Let's just check with the presidency that the minister will be there, not the acting minister. If not, then we will take it from there. And I agree, Mam Dulashe, the issue is that we've really been having problems with tying down the presidency to these meetings on these matters. And it just doesn't inspire the kind of confidence that is required. There's also the matter of the acting DG of Public Works and Infrastructure, which is being handled at that level as well. So as colleagues recall, but I take the guidance and thank you, Babu Somyo, Mam Dulashe, and Butbegi for that. We will communicate accordingly on that matter. Colleagues, let us not keep you. There is a hectic day today and an important debate in the House on Section 25 at 2 o'clock, which requires all of us to be there. And it's now 20 to 1. I'm sure that we all need to prepare ourselves for that. The wheels of democracy keep moving. And so I think let us bring it to an end accordingly on that one. Babu Mtibi, and to the provincial heads, AG and National Treasury as always. Sabonga Kakhulu. Colleagues, thank you very much and we'll meet tomorrow. Uputben and Sestombi will communicate on those issues. And Babu Somyo, we will be in your committee's hands tomorrow when we meet with the AG. Colleagues, thank you very much. Have a wonderful day further. Take care and God bless.
Long live the chair.
I can't. I can't. I can't.